Welcome to the Knit More Girls podcast, a mother-daughter knitting production. This is our Director's Cut episode with Rachel Heron, author of How to Knit a Love Song. This episode has been sponsored by Pearlescence Yarns, nurturing the love of the craft. You can find How to Knit a Love Song at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and at your local books and yarn store. And now, without further ado, our chat with Rachel. This week we're chatting with Rachel Heron about her new book. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's great. I'm so happy to be here. It's Stitches weekend.
Isn't it so exciting?
Yes.
Have you been on the floor yet?
I have been on the floor for a number of hours now, and I'm already, my top of my head has already come off a couple of times with excitement.
Have you been to your car already?
I have been to my car. Just once, and it's raining out there, so I think I'll stay inside.
Good idea.
Yeah, for a little while.
It's crazy because it was sunny out yesterday, right?
I know.
Pouring today. The reason we're chatting with you, other than being a knitting blogger, is that you are writing a book, which is coming out very soon. Or actually, it'll come out before
Tuesday.
We do this.
Yeah, it's probably, by the time you hear this, it's already out. It's available.
So why don't you talk about the book a little bit, and we'll talk about stuff.
All right. It's called How to Knit a Love Song, and it's the first of a series in the Cypress Hollow Yarns, and it's coming out from HarperCollins Avon A. And it's my first novel. It's a debut novel, and it's really exciting. I write the blog Yarnagogo, and what should I tell you about it? So,
do you want to give people the taster of the book? Because
yeah.
I've been reading it, and I like it so far. So,
well, I'm very glad to hear that. It's the story of Abigail and Cade, and Abigail is a knit designer, and Cade is a sheep rancher, and I like to say that they both need wool. But neither of them need it to generate heat because they generate enough of their own. And basically, there is Abigail inherits a tiny plot of land on a ranch that Cade thought he would inherit the whole thing. And so he is furious that she inherits that tiny parcel, and she turns this cottage into a knitting store, which infuriates him. And so, of course, sparks fly, and he does not want the knitting store, and she's just trying to get by. She's also trying to escape a danger from her past and start a new life.
A twist.
There's a twist. I call it light romantic suspense, because I don't really like to break the speed limit, so scary things scare me. And they scare Abigail, and she's trying to outrun that part of her past.
That's a good idea. So what made you decide to write effectively like a knitting romance novel, sort of?
I decided to write knitting romance because I had written literature for a long time. Mm-hmm. I have a master's from Mills College, and I had written very serious stuff for a long time, and that got exhausting, and I stopped writing completely. And I picked up something called NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, mm-hmm. and it was my first time trying this, and National Novel Writing Month, you write 50,000 words in the month of November, and they can be awful words. They can be the worst words you've ever written. They don't have to make sense. You can write the same sentence over six times if you can't think of what to say. All you're trying to do is write 50,000 words. And I wanted to write something fun and something I loved. And I love reading romances, and I love knitting. I have been knitting since I was 5 years old. And so I wanted to do something that was just going to make me happy. And after I wrote this book, I realized, after I wrote, well, the first 50,000 words, which is not a book, but after I wrote this, I realized it was the best writing I'd ever done because I had given myself the freedom to write something that I wanted to write. And I didn't finish it at that point. I put it away. The month of November was magic, but I didn't do anything with it for about a year. And then I pulled it out and started working on it after a reader of mine on Yarnagogo told me that there was a first romance contest online, and I entered that and did pretty well, and then decided to clean it up and kind of shop it around to agents.
Awesome. And how did that go, the shopping it around? And
the shopping around was really something else. There's a whole process and a learning curve that happens quite quickly. There's a whole process. I found that agentquery.com is the best site out there for anybody who's trying to do it. It's a free site. You can go in and put, if you've written a romance, you can put the word romance in, and it'll sort agents out for you, tell you exactly what they're looking for, tell you exactly how to submit to them, tell you how to write a query letter. And there's a formula, and there's a way to do it, and a way to track what you've done. And it's not easy, but you can get through the slush pile. You don't have to know someone. Everybody tells you you have to know somebody in the publishing industry. I didn't know anybody, and my agent found me through the slush pile. Her assistant read my manuscript and liked it and gave it to my agent, and she liked it, and she gave me the most exciting phone call of my life. Well, that was actually the second most exciting. The first most exciting was the one where she said my editor wanted to buy the book. That's called the call. That's what writers talk about, the call.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Are you doing any promotional stuff for the book?
I feel like I'm doing nothing but promotion right now. I think about it. I dream it. Right now, you can't see me, but I'm at Stitches West, and I'm wearing a shirt that says, Ask Me How to Knit a Love Song. And I'm walking around the floor of Stitches West and smiling at people, because I really want people to know about this book, and it's my baby. I feel like I've given birth to this book that I love. But you can only do what you can do, and then you have to kind of put that aside. And I'm finishing book two, and book three is also mostly written, but now that book two is done, I know that I want to change book three. And so promotion has to go to the side, and the writing has to get done. That's the most important part of writing, is actually the writing. So, but promotion is fun. I mean, things like Twitter and Facebook and talking to people and going to writing conventions, that's all great. And printing bookmarks and excerpts, that's fun. I enjoy that part of the process.
Excellent. So let's talk about your knitting. You mentioned before we were recording that you started knitting when you were five.
Yeah.
Who taught you how to knit? How did knitting find you?
My mom taught me to knit. I was always a crafty little kid and wanted to do anything like that. Mom taught me how to knit and purl, and then she gave me Elizabeth Zimmerman's Knitting Without Tears. And I remember trying to follow the pictures, and I worshipped that book and taught myself everything else. I remember my first sweater that I ever made, I think I was 8 or 9, and it was electric blue, and I didn't realize that you would have to leave room for your head to go through when I bound off the neck. So whenever I would put my head through it, it would kind of scrape my face right off. And I've always, always, always loved to knit. Mom never was a big knitter. No one else in the house was a big knitter, but I was always, always knitting. I was a completely nerdy child. I had glasses and braces and was always knitting. So when the knitting craze came back into favor, what was it, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I was so excited because I was finally cool again, and I dread the day that it goes out of style, because I'm gonna go right back to being uncool.
Never.
Never. Never, exactly.
Never. Awesome. So you do the Yarn A Go Go blog.
Mm-hmm.
What made you start blogging? Just because you'd already been a writer?
I started blogging. My sister told me about this blogging thing, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago, and I did not start out as a knitting blogger. I just started out as kind of an online journal. And every once in a while, I would talk about knitting, and the knitters found me. And I was originally at a site, I think I still am actually, if you type this in, you get to my blog. It's myglasshouse.typepad.com. And the knitters found me, and they started going to me and linking to me, and I became a knitting blog. However, if you ever look at my blog, I don't actually write about knitting very much. I'm one of those people that comes up with a ta-da.
Mm-hmm.
I never write about the process. I come up with the ta-da, here's my new sweater. Ta-da, here's my new thing I did. And so it's interesting that I've been, but all my friends online are knitters, and I love the knitters. It's the best community there is, and knitters are legion, and they're everywhere, and they're in the publishing industry. There's been some interesting strings that have been pulled in interesting ways from knitters, and people don't understand how many there are of us out there. It's so exciting and fun.
It's so true.
Yeah, in every aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we do, there's a knitter that we know.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we've talked about before how knitters are the best networkers, because you want to work with other people who are like you.
Yeah.
So, especially in this area, because you're local to the area.
Mm-hmm.
You live in Oakland?
I live in Oakland. I love Oakland. I got my master's in Oakland at Mills, and we were saying...
Yeah, I went to Mills too. So what year did you get your MFA?
I got my master's in 99.
Okay.
When did you graduate?
2004.
Okay. And what was your degree in?
English literature.
Yay!
The minor in journalism.
Probably had some of the same instructors.
Totally.
Yay. My sister was a Mills woman too. She graduated... with her bachelor's in English, I think, in 1994 or something like that. So I'm a bent twig.
That's right.
Yes.
So what do you like to knit? I mean, you're a writer and a knitter, and how do you balance the writing and the knitting? And what do you knit? Do you knit simple stuff when you're writing? Do you knit complicated stuff so that you can feed your brain?
I find that they're completely analogous. I find that when I'm revising, my sweaters. I mostly knit sweaters. And for the first book... Abigail knits a sweater throughout the book. And of course, it turns out that she has been knitting the sweater for Cade, the hero, the whole way through, even though she didn't know it. And in the second book, I've been working on the sweater for the second book. And I'm also working on revisions. And I find that I'm working on the revision of the neckline. And I'm really frustrated with this revision of the neckline. And I'm kind of frustrated with the revisions as I'm finishing them. But I find that writing and knitting are so similar in that if you just sit down and do a few things every day, it gets done. You knit every day, you get a sweater sooner rather than later. If you write every single day, you get a book sooner rather than later. I think it's a discipline that's built into you without you ever really having to think about it. And I think that's where my discipline comes from, is perhaps from the knitting. I learned the discipline through knitting before I got it from the writing.
Interesting. Did you always write, like as a kid?
Yeah, always. I always wanted to write. Did you do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As a journalism English person, I'm sure that you did.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, how knitting and all these things kind of weave together and apply to different things. Mm-hmm. So it's not always... the knitting on the side. That's what I like most about the book, is that the knitting is naturally integrated into it. It's not forced or gratuitous, like gratuitous knitting. There is such a thing.
Knitting.
Well, you know, when you include it and you're like, oh yeah, and let's make them a knitter.
I've read books like that where it's been stuck in. And we were talking about this earlier, there are a lot of knitting books out there because it is a popular, knit lit is a popular genre.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh, it's a thing. Knit lit.
I didn't realize we had
editors.
A genre.
There is a genre, and editors are looking to acquire it because it's popular. And luckily, I think that I'm a writer who my editor likes because the voice is natural to me because it's my language and I speak it. And
yeah. And
I'm glad that you like that. I'm glad that you heard that.
Yeah. I think the difference is that you've been a knitter for a really long time, and it's not really about how long you've been knitting, but it's how familiar you are with knitting. And I think newer knitters are more enthusiastic. And there was one I read where they were describing every piece of clothing that everyone was wearing, and it wasn't natural. But when it's integrated into your life and it's just a part of you, when we chatted with someone on a different podcast, she asked about how knitting works in our lives, and I said it's like an arm.
Yeah.
You don't think about it unless you don't have it. So
That's very interesting.
And it's in the book, it's integrated really nicely thus far. I only started it a few nights ago because I knew that your publication date was coming up and I wanted to get it read before we chatted with you.
That's a very interesting comment, though. And I actually am going to look at the second book in the revisions and make sure that I'm kind of getting the same voice because I like what you're saying.
Oh, thank
so you. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. Yeah. Do you have any questions? Mom's been a big romance novel fan for years.
Oh, good.
So
tell us about the sweater that Rachel is knitting.
Abigail.
Abigail is knitting. And does it involve the sweater curse? Does that play any part, or is that giving away plot?
It's not giving away plot, and it does not involve the sweater curse at all because Abigail does not know she's knitting the sweater for Cade. It's absolutely subconscious. She's a knitwear designer in the book, and this is just going to be a man's sweater for her new book. And it's a raglan Guernsey sweater, and it just happens to be the best color for him, and it just happens to be the exact size for him. And it just happens that he tries it on at one point and that it looks terrific on him. So,
what state is the story located in?
It's set on the central coast of California, about, and in my head, it's about 2 hours south of San Francisco. And I finally realized recently that, have you ever been to Pescadero area?
Mm-hmm.
I finally realized that it's kind of that region, that area, if Pescadero were a slightly larger town. And I was actually at a restaurant in Pescadero, the only real restaurant there, called Duart's. And I heard some ranchers talking there the other day, and I realized they were my ranchers that I'd been writing about, and they were saying things that my ranchers say, and that's my fictional town of Cypress Hollow, if it were larger and real.
Oh, it's true. The one complaint we are always getting from the guys is that the sweaters are too heavy and they get too warm. But if he's a rancher,
he's outside and
he's outside, and it gets cold later in the day, or if they have to go out at night. So
it's appropriate.
The sweaters would be quite useful.
Mm-hmm. I think he would like this.
Yeah. So what you're saying, and I'm going to knitting mythology, and as a writer, I would like your opinion on this. So what you're saying is that the sweater curse doesn't work if it's not deliberately made for them. So if it's an incidental sweater, the curse doesn't apply.
Accidental sweater. I would say that is true.
Okay, fair enough. Is there any other knitting mythology you'd like to clear up?
Not that I can think of, but now I want to think of some that I can clear up.
It's like the vampire mythos. Like every different author has their own different take on it.
Yeah.
Do your sweaters sparkle? I mean, I'm sorry.
In moonlight only. That's the outside twist.
How much research did you do about the sheep for the book?
My mother's from New Zealand, so I was around sheep growing up, and my family's from sheep ranches. And so I didn't do that much research. And in fact, every time Cade had to go out and do something mm-hmm. on the farm, and in New Zealand we call them farms, and I have to stop saying that. It's a sheep ranch. I had to change all the words in the book. But whenever he would have to go out and do something, he was always fixing a fence because I could never think of anything else for him to do. So I had to go back at the end and fix all these times that he was fixing fences because he couldn't spend that much time fixing fences. But at the end of the book, when I was going back and fixing things, I did go out to a local sheep ranch out in Livermore, a friend. And I was hanging out with the sheep rancher, and he was taking me around, and we were looking at sheep and touching sheep, because I'm a knitter and I love to go look at sheep, I am familiar enough with sheep. But this time I was asking about the running of the ranch and how does it work. And I made this joke about how much Cade fixes fences, and the rancher said, "Yep, I mostly fix fences." So I had gotten that part right, that there is a lot of fence fixing.
So are the sheep a particular breed of sheep? Are they wool sheep? Are they meat sheep? What kind of sheep does Cade have on his...
Cade raises mostly meat and a little bit of wool, and he also produces quite a few for the 4-H kids, for the spring lambs for the kids to take mm-hmm. and show.
Am I remembering that they were Suffolk sheep?
I you know what? I actually am having a hard time remembering. Okay. I think they were Suffolk and maybe some Corridale.
Okay. That's right, I think. I don't know.
Is that right?
You know,
it's been a while since I actually remember that.
It was just, I was reading in bed, so
I think you're right, though.
Okay. Yes. What did you do before you were writing about knitting and romance?
I did what I'm still doing now. I'm a 911 dispatcher.
Okay.
For fire and medical.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's a good job. Every time I pick up the phone, there's another window on the human condition, as I like to look at it. And that's, you know, it's good, and it pays the bills. And while I'm creating my vast knitlet empire,
somebody has to do it.
Somebody has to do it. Or, you know, I'll sell a few books to my friends at Stitches. I don't know.
Excellent. So are you going to be doing any of the other shows, or are you just doing the local shows?
I'm just giving out excerpts here, and then I've got a few signings coming up, one in Brentwood. And then my book launch party is March 16th at Bookshop West Portal. And then I'm signing with Crazy Aunt Pearl down in L.A. on March 21st. And then I have a signing in Boise on March 25th. And then I'll be out in Columbus and then in Nashville in summer. So I'm kind of moving around. And I hope to get out to Rhinebeck and maybe Stitches South as well.
That is awesome. So, and then you have a calendar on your blog as to where you're going to be.
Yes. Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's all on there.
Okay.
All available on Yarnagogo.
So people always think that knitters are tame old ladies. And obviously the main character in your book is not a little old lady. How wild does it get?
It gets quite wild.
But it's a romance novel. I mean, it's par for the course.
It's steamy. I think that Romantic Times, they gave it 4 stars and they rated it hot.
Okay.
So
not bedtime reading for the kids.
This is not bedtime reading out loud. There are 4-letter words. Never mind. There are 4-letter words as well.
Yep. I haven't hit any yet, but they're there. I mean, that's the whole thing. Not everything is aimed for everybody.
Exactly. Exactly.
So if mom wants to read it, she shouldn't leave it out where the teenagers or where the kiddies can find it and read it.
Yes. Yes.
So you talked about how you're working on the books. Have you had any epic writing disasters? Anything where you just looked at it and went, what have I done?
The second book was originally going to be a true romantic suspense with a bad guy and this is kind of a spoiler for a book that doesn't exist, that the heroine ends up killing in the end, basically shooting point blank, and then it just wasn't working, and I came to my editor and said, I can't do this, and she said, well, get rid of it, change it, and it's not like that at all. The book that you will read as a second book is wonderful, and I love it, and there's no romantic suspense, and there's no killing, and so it was kind of this crazy disaster of editing mega mountainous proportions, and I think it's that second book curse that people talk about, and but it's been so awesome to work through. So I don't think that that's actually a disaster, but it's definitely been a learning process about the revision.
So part of the book had to be frogged.
Yes, that's exactly it. The book was frogged. I think the final product is 95,000 words, and the cut file is 80,000 words. The words that did not make it in the book at all.
Oh, that's a big oops.
Yeah, it's almost the same size.
So when you sit down to write, what is your ideal environment? Do you sit down with your coffee and your computer, or are you a paper person?
Definitely coffee, computer, first thing in the morning. I usually get up at 3:45 or 4 to write before I go to work on my work days and get about an hour in there because I work 12-hour shifts. And on my days off, I usually am at the computer by 7 or 8. And then on those days, I try to work all day. And I've got a ton of animals running around, 4 cats and 3 dogs. And I have the office at the front of the house, so I'm looking out on the street, and I can see UPS go by and the kids running by and people going to school. And I just sit at the computer and work, and I love it. There's usually a cat on my lap.
So what I'm hearing is that you write every single day.
Yes.
Is that the tip to writing and the secret? Is that the secret?
I think for me, it's definitely my secret. It was my breakthrough. When I committed to write every day, the day I committed to write every day, 3 days later, I got the call from my agent. And everything started to snowball. That was the day of my commitment. Everything in my life changed. And that was 4 years ago. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was, that's when I started the book. That was 18 months ago or so.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's all happened really quickly.
Excellent.
How much knitting do you get done? And when do you knit? And what do you knit?
I knit mostly sweaters. I think sweaters are the most satisfying to me. I'm able to knit at work between calls, so I actually get work done there. If I'm not typing while I'm talking on a phone call, I can have it in my lap, kind of idly fidgeting. We're allowed to do that kind of busy work. So that's a nice thing because I wear a headset at work. So when I'm not talking on the radio to the fire engines or when I'm not actually typing on the computer, I can do that. And I honestly knit a lot less now than I'm writing all the time. I have had to trade some of that. I was a more productive knitter when I was a less productive writer. But I think it's a really good trade.
This week, we'd like to thank show sponsors Pearlescence Yarns, our interviewee, Rachel Herron, but most importantly, you, our listeners. Absolutely everything you've heard about in this week's episode can be found at the show notes, which are located at knitmoregirls.blogspot.com, and you can send your comments, questions, and feedback to us at knitmoregirls@yahoo.com.
Hey, this is Rachel.
Jasmine.
And Gigi.
Telling you to knit more.